Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, it's John and Lance.
On ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Now here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, welcome back. It is fantasy time. And any little edge you can get for your draft, it's kind of a big deal. It could make you a winner. And Scott Barrett is a follow because he has got some great information at Fantasy Points. Scott Barrett is right now, at Scott Barrett, is joining us right now. On ESPN, are you at Scott Barrett? Is that your, yeah, at Scott Barrett DFB. At Scott Barrett DFB. I just gave you a follow, Scott. I got about 15 people that I'm following fantasy wise, and there's always great little tidbits, but I'm looking at your site and it's great. Great stuff. And you got a great endorsement from Ryan Pagnetti, huh?
Yeah. Ryan gave us so we do data as well, Fantasy Points data.
Yeah, tell people who Ryan is also, Scott.
Yeah. So Ryan was the former NFL director of analytics for the Jacksonville Jaguars last year. He was with the Las Vegas Raiders helping out on the coaching side, but just like an absolute analytics wizard. So we also have a data arm, and we've struggled to kind of break through, I think, because we have fantasy in the name. It's viewed as like sort of lesser than. And yeah, we got a quote from him that said, you know, our data is better, more accurate than what the NFL teams were paying six figures for. So yeah, check out fantasypoints.com for help with your fantasy team and Fantasy Points data as well.
He yep. thought you'd do a better job of evaluating running backs than a lot of teams do.
He specifically said that to me as well. Yeah, I think one of the highlights of my career was we were DMing right after the Jaguars took Brian Thomas Jr. And he was talking to me about how he brought up some of my tweets to the team and the scouts, and they were talking about, I think the stat I had, Lance, you might appreciate, was something like the go route and the hitch route made up 73% of all of BTJ's yards his final year at LSU.
Yeah. That's important context a lot of times for sometime draft. And it was funny, Scott and I, it was kind of not really intertwined, but Scott and I ended up in a little disagreement online, and then we kind of like realized it was stupid. You know, we talked, and because we both have respect for each other. And I said, you know, you can come up here anytime you want. We just watch film. He's like, yeah, I'd love to do that. He came up, and we spent, I don't know, a couple hours watching tape together during the draft process last year, Scott.
Yeah, another absolute highlight of my career. I kind of came in hot at you, and you were really the bigger man, and you even extended an invite to let me watch film with you, which is like, I felt like a Make-A-Wish kid. It was incredible. Learned a lot.
Well, let's talk a little bit. You just mentioned Brian Thomas Jr. He had a shoulder injury at practice. We have Brock Bowers, who's got a knee issue. We got Amika Buka with a toe injury. We got Malik Nabers. I'm not sure what to do. What are we doing with these injuries, and how worrisome are they for a lot of these big-name fantasy guys?
I kind of don't remember this many injuries in August. It seems like a lot. Luckily, we do have one of the better injury experts on staff, Jeff Mueller. And so I was talking to him about a lot of this the other day. Jamar Chase, we got to wait and see.
Yeah.
Ashton Jeanty, we're really hoping to hear more on. Maybe even Mike Evans, too, given his injury history. But Emeka Buka and Brock Bowers were two of the ones he was more optimistic on.
The toe is always bothersome, though, that scared me a little bit. Ashton Jeanty, you mentioned him. We were talking about him a little bit earlier. Can you trust him this year?
Can you trust the O-line? Let me read this. Clint Kubiak also came out yesterday. We didn't mention this. And basically said, you know, he had an injury on, what was it, Scott, Monday. It was either Monday or Tuesday, where the players basically took a knee and then said, you know, we're glad, we think he's going to be okay. But obviously, you know, he could use your prayers or something that was very ominous sounding, to be honest with you, with Austin Gentry.
Yeah.
What's the latest? What are your expectations for a player who had a bad offensive line in front of him last year that really hurt him? John and I talked about him being one of the biggest boom-bust guys at running back.
Yeah, I think that's really right. Yeah, so he went down in practice. There was a prayer circle forming around him. You know, people really thought it was going to be the worst-case scenario. Then it wasn't even a high ankle sprain. It was a low ankle sprain. Puts him about 50-50 for week one. But he's tricky because, like you said, yeah, this is an awful offensive line. The one thing I'll say is, you know, volume really wins for running backs in fantasy at the end of the day. So if you're catching a lot of passes, it doesn't matter too much. It was really like an anomaly, just how few fantasy points Gentry scored last year relative to the volume he had. And another good thing is Clint Kubiak is sort of like an O-line whisperer in addition to everything else, where if you look back at all of his recent stops, before he got there, the offensive line ranked bottom five in rushing yards before contact per attempt. And then his first year there, they were average to slightly above average. You're the O-line expert, Lance, but do you think maybe just with better coaching, he could help elevate what's really on paper probably like a fringe bottom seven unit?
Yeah. Yes. And especially when you really focus in on a lot of inside-outside zone, that's a repetition game. But Jackson Powers Booth comes back from an injury that he sustained kind of later in the year. Colton Miller, you know, Trevor Lindenbaum, you can't – it's just, I think, Spencer Burford. The problem is if you're not good between guard and guard, if you have a weak link inside, a lot of – four guys can win and one guy lose and the play blows up. So the battle for left guard is going to be really, really important, I think, for the Raiders. So, and, you know, let's face it, Mike Washington –
listen, I'm gonna get handcuffs. Talented. If I'm getting Ashton Gentry, I'm getting him Washington for handcuffs.
You have to get Mike Washington, especially in that zone scheme where he's looked good in the preseason. There, you know, I noticed the ESPN mock, the marathon mock that they have is going on. I had my first draft. It was for NFL media. I just kind of half paid attention. Our fantasy auction that we've had for years and years is our big one, but it was interesting that 10 of the first 13 picks were running backs this year, and I experienced this for myself 2 days ago. Boy, talk about running back tiers, because there is a substantial fall off after you get past tier two, depending on how you break tier two, tier three. I can see why there might be, you remember the old days, Scott, of running back, and then that really changed with PPR, but it feels like, is there another move to scoop up running backs early now in the draft for fear of running out of top options?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So in a vacuum, running back is the most important, most valuable position worth taking early because it's the position of greatest scarcity. So in a vacuum, that's optimal, but like also every year is its own unique special snowflake. And so like last year, I said you didn't need to go RB because you had Cam Scataboo in round seven, and he was, you know, a must draft pick for me. This year, it's really barren after those first three rounds. There isn't a Cam Scataboo I want to go all in on. And then with wide receiver, there's just so much value. So if you're in ESPN snake league, T. Higgins goes like wide receiver 21, and I have him wide receiver 13 in my rankings. He's an extreme value. Luther Burden's must draft. In the later rounds, Josh Downs, Chris Godwin, extreme value. So you can really get away with, you know, not drafting a wide receiver early, but you can't do that with running backs.
Tell Dell. I got a feeling this will mean something to Dell. Tell him what you call your special fantasy players that you think unlock all the power. You got a special name.
Yeah, so those are my Exodia picks. I get five, and the whole thing is if you draft, and so you're in an auction. This is perfect for it. If you get all five of my guys, you basically automatically win your league. It's a very nerdy Yu-Gi-Oh reference where if you collect all five Exodia cards, you automatically win your duel. So
I love that. So
you automatically win, and we can find those on your
Don't tell them where, Scott.
Yeah,
I've already downloaded it.
I need those, Scott.
Well, then do your own work, John.
I got a couple of questions for you. You got the first pick, Jameer or Bijan?
That's Gibbs for me with the first overall pick. He averages 28.5 fantasy points per game in games without David Montgomery.
Yeah. Is he going to be more or are we going to see Pacheco on the field and Sharon with him? Was he more effective because Montgomery was there? Because he, we talked about this, he fewer touches. Maybe he was, he was feeling even better at that later in the game, or is he going to be that much bigger, that much better without David Montgomery?
Well, in fantasy, especially in a half PPR or full PPR league, you really just want those more touches. It's very rare that a running back gets more touches and is worse off for it. Just the efficiency already, he was, top three in fantasy points per touch, fantasy points per snap. And you have Dan Campbell talking about, hey, he's going to carry the load for us. He's going to be our bell cow. I really see Gibbs potentially having a year like LaDainian Tomlinson used to have, or prime, healthy Christian McCaffrey, where it almost feels impossible to win your league without him.
How much do you trust Kyle Pitts this year?
Who?
I'll be honest, not at all. That's one of my big fades. He only has one 100-yard game over the last four seasons. There's like 28 tight ends who have as many or more. And then in games, Drake London was healthy last year. He averaged only 10 fantasy points per game. Tua Tagovailoa does not look good. All reports are kind of awful. So he's actually a big fade for me.
I want to follow up on that, John, because I'm gonna mention you mentioned one tight end. I'm gonna mention three more tight ends, and you tell me where you're on these guys, because it has always been an important position, because there's been a definitive cutoff after maybe the top two tiers, and that's a big advantage if you go get one of those guys. Travis Kelce, George Kittle, mm-hmm. Sam Laporta. Where do you see those three?
Travis Kelce, I'm not too bullish on. So the number one thing to know for fantasy is upside is everything. Upside is so much more valuable than downside is detrimental. And at this stage of his career, I just don't see a ton of upside for him. Sam Laporta, George Kittle, I see a ton of upside, especially at their cost. They're a little deflated due to injury concerns. So the value is phenomenal. George Kittle, over the last 2 years combined, averages the exact same fantasy points per game as Justin Jefferson. Jefferson goes in round one, George Kittle goes in round 10, and then Sam Laporta, he's always top three in fantasy points for route run, and now he gets Drew Petzig, who historically, full-time tight end, rarely coming off the field, so I see a big volume boost, and even if that's wrong, just the floor is high in that offense. George Kittle, absolutely must draft. And then on ESPN, Tucker Kraft is another really good value.
Well, I had Tyler Warren in both of my I thought he was my must-have guy last year. And he was great with Daniel Jones, and then not without him. Where are you on Tyler Warren this year?
Well, that makes sense. He would not be good without Daniel Jones. He had a literal grandfather as his starting quarterback. but up until that injury, the fractured fibula, so like week 10, he was averaging more yards per route run than rookie season Brock Bowers. He was leading all tight ends in receiving yards or behind only Trey McBride. This is like a phenomenal prospect. He set the record for most yards from scrimmage by any power conference tight end ever. And then like I said, last year he's breaking leagues and, just ran bad with quarterback injury luck. I don't like drafting tight ends that early just because it's running back, wide receiver are the premium positions that matter more. But just in terms of the player, I love Tyler Warren.
Okay, so if you have a question right now, we're going to let you jump in with Scott. Scott Barrett, Fantasy Points. Also, he's not here this week, but he lives here in Houston. So you're also supporting local at Fantasy Points. If you want to check that out, my old friend John Hansen, the guru, is there with those guys, Joe Dolan. As well, who I used to do some stuff with over at when we were at NFL Films mock draft, he was in there. When I've told the story about Johnny Manziel, where Jaws, Ron Jaworski said, "Yeah, you guys like Johnny? Let's go upstairs and watch the tape on him. See what you see." And I came back. I'll never forget. I came back and did Sports Talk Radio after being there. Like, ugh, wasn't as good when I got to watch y'all 22. Yuck. But anyway, so you got some of those guys who were. Big in the New Jersey, Philadelphia area at the time. I want to, if you have a question, 713-780-3776, you can ask Scott about a player. We're talking about redraft 12-team PPR type leagues right now. It's more the standard league of what you see, sometimes half-point PPR. and then we can get into Dynasty if you have Dynasty questions. I came out with a projection for rookies on NFL.com, and I was doing my own research and work on that. And it took a little while. It took me a little longer than expected. Now, I've done this for fantasy football for many years, but I stopped doing it over the last 3 years, and I had to jump back in. It's tricky now because it feels like things for this draft class are a little unsettled. And I give you a couple names that are like DeJuan Stribling from San Francisco with the 49ers.
Especially if Mike Evans isn't healthy.
And let's also talk about Carnell Tate, who is, I guess, wide receiver two, I guess, with Cam Ward. They've just added Wandale Robinson, who's a high-volume target last year, at least, with the Giants. Where are you on those two guys specifically? Because there are a lot of, there's a lot of buzz about the potential for both guys.
Yeah, so you have to remember the cost associated with both. So Carnell Tate goes, I don't know, six rounds earlier. So I really love DeJuan Stribling as a later round pick, and I know his ADP is climbing. I kind of want to get ahead of it. I just see a ton of upside with him in that offense. You know, Kyle Shanahan may be the best offensive play caller in the league. And you have Mike Evans, old injury prone. You have George Kittle, old injury prone. Christian McCaffrey, old injury prone. Deebo Samuel, possibly overweight, old injury prone. And so, yeah, they kind of really need someone to step up, or at least someone to stay healthy. He's been breaking preseason records. I know preseason doesn't really matter, but it probably matters at the polar extremes, and the numbers he's putting up, kind of insane. And it's just a great offense you want to stay invested in. So I'd love to know where you were at on DeJuan Stribling, because, you know, my analytics model wasn't super high on him.
No. People are upset. People think I'm too low on him. But when I look at the, you know, I obviously have to look at usage. I look at where he's best and where, you know, what he. So I take my draft stuff, then I try to meld it with expectations inside the offense, and I try to meld it with, you know, depth chart type of stuff. And I'll pull it up. I'll pull it up here in a second. But everyone thinks I'm being too low on him. But when I really look through, and George Kittle, I think, is going to be a bigger part. You're obviously going to continue to get McCaffrey with a ton of targets. I just think people are running a little too wild with his target count, to be honest with you. And that's how I've got him with, it's pretty low. I have 36 catches, 543 yards, 3 touchdowns. I've got a best case and a worst case scenario that I had to write. So I said, best case, Stribling proves why the Niners were enamored with him during the draft process, using his long strides and speed to create windows for Brock Purdy over the second and third levels on his way to a 6-touchdown season, 600-yard season. Worst case scenario, as Mike Evans becomes, that's another one. You know, listen to these mouths. These are Christian McCaffrey, Mike Evans when he's healthy, if he's healthy, George Kittle if he's healthy. They added Deebo Samuel. Brock Purdy knows, I mean, Mike is Mike. He's never thrown to Mike Evans, but these are all hogs when it comes to targets. These are all target hogs. I'm not sure where all the touches are going to come for Stribling.
Right. If you're projecting everyone to stay healthy, there's really not. But it's the contingent upside he offers should one or multiple of those names go down. And like how it's been, the 49ers is typically, you know, those guys are like, one of the stats I have is when George Kittle, Christian McCaffrey, and the left tackle were all on the field together, the 49ers EPA per play was like twice as good as any other team. It's just that combination of players have been on the field together only 13% of their total snaps over the last 2 years. Where, yeah, you know, conspiracy theories about the electrical substation or what, but yeah, they're really just, you know, one of the top three most injury prone teams like 6 years in a row, where if they just had like average injury luck, like, Kyle might have more Super Bowls than Patrick Mahomes. But, you know, back to fantasy. Yeah, it's just, you know, I do think there's a really good chance he's available on waivers and you didn't need to draft him in week 4. That's kind of the risk I'm seeing. But I think he has really good odds of being a championship winner, a league winner in the second half of the year. But he may need to a good run out with injuries.
We've got Scott Barrett, at Scott Barrett, DFB with us here this morning on ESPN 97.5. Malik Nabers, where you got him ranked? I see everybody's got him low. Where you got him?
Yeah, I'm pretty bullish on him. Wide receiver 12. And again, this goes back to upside wins championships in fantasy. Upside's everything in fantasy. And so over his last seven fully healthy games, no other wide receiver comes close to him. He's 11.1 targets per game. He's 111 yards per game. And he's 22 fantasy points. So, like, that's Ja'Marr Chase. It's Puka Nacua and no one else. And so you can get a really nice discount on him. But, again, there's a trade-off. There's a good chance he's not going to be 100% until October, maybe even November. And so you kind of have to weather that storm. But the way I like to build my teams is, like, they're generally slow starters. You know, there's a good chance you go 1-3 in September, but then by the time playoffs come around, you have the juggernaut team everyone's scared of. And, like, that's when you really want to be strong. The final 3-4 weeks of the season matter exponentially more than the first, just because that's how important playoffs are. And so, yeah, this is one of my guys. This is a player I'm really bullish on, but certainly there are some risks that come with that as well.
Scott, this is Scott Barrett from Fantasy Points. And it's a website you can jump in on. They've got a ton of draft info, draft kits. There's a lot of great information and great articles that help you strategy-wise. Do you have any kind of strategies you use for waiver wire? Because, you know, it's usually snaked out. And so if you guys play fantasy, you already know. If you don't use your waiver wire that week, then you can move up in the process. Do you have any – is there a strategy? Is it just random, you know, based on who's available? Or do you have – you know, soft strategies that you use for as it pertains to the waiver wire? Because we also know championships are also built on the waiver wire.
No, that's right, especially now where it feels like injuries are more common than they used to be. This is going to sound like a cop-out and a plug, but I would really encourage people to read our award-winning waiver wire column. I have plenty of friends who, like, have literally never watched a game of football, don't know what a quarterback is or a running back, and they'll just, like, dominate their work league filled with, like, guys who love football. Just all they do is they read my draft guide, they read our waiver wire column, and they use our projections for start sit, and that's kind of all it takes. I think most leagues are fab these days, but if it's, you know, waiver priority, I would say, you know, if you're close to the top, you know, really try and save it for someone special, especially in an 18-10 team. But otherwise, I don't know. I'm usually one of those teams all the way at the bottom, just constantly churning through the waiver wire and taking shots on guys.
That's Scott Barrett, at Scott Barrett DFB on Twitter. Must follow, subscribe. Is there a subscription, or you just got to tell us how to get involved, get all your information?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Scott Barrett DFB. If you want to check out my draft guide, you can subscribe at fantasypoints.com. Use promo code EXODIA, EXODIA. Turns it from $60, and you get 15% off on top of that. So, yeah, promo code EXODIA, that's fantasypoints.com.
That's all right. Fantasy Points at X. The promo code is EXODIA. Exodia. That's Fantasy Points. Scott Barrett right here. We got to have
next
back
week
on.
Yeah, Scott will be back on next week.
Next week, because
still a lot of drafts.
The following week both of our drafts.
Yeah.
The following week. Yeah. Labor Day and then the following day.
I hate early drafts, Scott. I mean, well, we got to break it now, but we'll talk about that next time.
Yeah.
These early drafts piss me off.
We're not doing any early drafts.
I know
drafts.
We don't, but I see other people do it. Like, you guys really think no one's getting injured?
Yeah, right.
In camp?
Right. Scott Barrett, Fantasy Points.
Thanks,
Scott. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you.
All right. Time to talk a little HRP. HRP.net. HRP is where I just saw. Matter of fact, Laura Beavers just came. Was walking in when I was walking in this morning. She comes in a little bit here. She helps out with the payroll getting straightened out. All the commercials that we've done, sends it in, and we've got a part-time worker. And she said, we're training somebody else. She's got another job, so she might move away, and somebody else can take this over. It's such an easy position for people to do this, all right? We've got a part-time person that comes in every so often, not many times a month, and takes care of all of our payroll needs because HRP does all the rest. HRP does everything, all right? If you just got to get in, you know, what? How many commercials we all did. Our business might be different than yours. Or how many sales that y'all had, where the sales went, to which salesperson. And then HRMP takes care of the rest. Their technology is second to none. There's no mistakes. It's just perfect every single time. And it's so easy for you. I mean, it cannot be easier for us, and it won't be easier for you. All you need to do is go to HRP.net, start the process, let them come and tell you how they can make your business better, make it so much easier, the bottom line where you're winning. HRP.net, 281-880-6525 or HRP.net.
You're listening to Houston's longest-running sports radio morning show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
From the Huntington Bank Studios, here's John and Lance.
Welcome back here on ESPN. The nicest gift I ever got in my whole life, Todd just came back from the brewery, a Coors Light brewery, and he brought me a sleeve of golf balls that my boy Justin is going to be so jealous. We went to Colorado to watch the Texans. When the Texans played Denver, we went and the Rockies were home. We decided to go do the road trip and go to the Coors Light Brewery. I just assumed that the Coors Light Brewery would be open, and it wasn't. And we didn't get to go to the brewery.
They don't give tours all the time?
Pardon me?
They don't give tours all the time?
No, not every day. And when we were there and we were going to go, I looked that morning, okay, let's go to the brewery. Oh, it's closed. Oh, I didn't know that. So make sure if you're going to go to the brewery. But Todd said it's the coolest thing ever, the Coors Light Brewery. And I got me some golf balls, and Justin will be jealous.
So we are obviously very different people. When I went to Hawaii, I did not look for a brewery, but I went to the Dole Factory. They give you the pineapple place.
Yeah.
They give you tours. They have their own little restaurant where it's all pineapple-based. So everything you eat, whether it's
pineapple
slushy,
did you have cottage cheese and pineapple?
I didn't. No, it's not my thing. I don't like the texture of cottage cheese.
I love that.
So I'm out.
See, we're very different people.
Well, I know.
Two Americans.
Put some salt and pepper on that cottage cheese and pineapple.
Nah, yeah. I'm done. They put you on the train. You just go around the entire facility that you see. I guess the I don't know if you. It's a pineapple farm. You just see all that stuff. It's fun. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's just a factory. And it's just pineapples. I mean, that's why I would feel like but you are so passionate about beer. It's
yeah.
Like, it would be different for you. I enjoyed it. I got one of their famous pineapple, I forgot what they officially call it, but it's kind of like a pineapple smoothie, but they have a different name for it. It's great. But at the end of the day, it's just a factory.
I went to a cigar rolling factory in Cuba. That was different. You're in Cuba, and there's these guys there. So we find out that every guy who rolls the cigars get 5 cigars every day when they roll, and they can have this to, for themselves or maybe to sell outside the factory.
Yeah. Right.
And but we didn't find it out until we're in there, and these guys are making eye contact with us, they're making their 40 cents a day working in communist Cuba, and they were making eye contact with us. And then if you look for too long, they go,
"Hey,
they're basically trying to say, you want these cigars? I'll sell you these cigars outside." And we're like, "I'm in literally Cuba. I don't want any problems at
no.
all. I want no problems.
Counterfeit. No.
No problems at all. They're going to sell me cigars. I don't want any problem. I'll buy them from the gift shop if I want them or from the shop. I don't want any problems of trying to, illegally. I don't know if I don't want to mess with the Cubans at all." And on that trip is when Trump literally toward the end said, Americans can no longer go to Cuba. And we're there. Like,
oh.
Hey, we can come back though, right? Because this is the hottest place I've ever been on the planet. Cuba in the summer was hotter than New Orleans or Houston. I've been in two terrible places when it comes to heat and humidity. And Cuba was beating the brakes off of both of them. And that was very nerve-wracking to have people trying to sell me stuff, like, very quietly, like, get my attention. Hey, I got a hookup for these cigars. Like, I don't want any problems.
So no.
I want to do things exactly by the book. Exactly. Then we get to the airport, and my friend's
girlfriend, you left your phone in the cab.
I did, and luckily got it back right before we left. That was not great.
Mm-hmm.
And we get to the customs. You check in, they go through your bags when you get to, you know, at the airport. When you go through, They may check your bags or whatever. And they told my friend's girlfriend, they said, you've got, they told me, you got a wire hanger in here. You can't bring this on. I'm like, yes, sir. I took my stuff out. Like, I'll just throw this in the bag. I'm good. Anything, whatever you say, just trying to get out of here. They told her, you can't have fingernail clippers on. You can't have this. She's like, what? I've traveled around the world and I can bring those. This is ridiculous. And she keeps talking back.
Does she know where she is?
We had to leave. Like, I walked off. I'm like, and even the guy who was with her was like, I'm not sticking around for this. She's going to get us all detained.
No, you're on your own.
And he said,
in a Cuban prison.
You can buy some more. It's just the, you know, it's the principle.
This is not,
no, there's
no
principle.
This is not going to be a weapon.
Like,
this is not our country.
There is a good chance, though, that the person checking the bag needed some clippers.
Give it to him.
Oh, well.
Oh, well. You win.
Right.
Bad day for you. Give up your clippers.
This guy going over there, why I was so paranoid is, I didn't really have anything to be paranoid about, but this guy going over there, we were talking, you know, it took us an hour to get our bags because it had been sprinkling, and they just say, well, if it's sprinkling, we can't bring your bags in from the plane. That's impossible. So we're just like, really? You can't just bring the bags in?
Yep.
And just put them on the conveyor belt? So we had to wait. We finally go, and he goes ahead. He got his bag first. They've got him pulled aside. They're going through his bag. They've pulled out what was, I think, a hookah or something like that. And they're, like, giving him they've got him in a side room. And it's just it's a hookah. It's not, and all I could think of was, Mike, does anyone have anything in this bag that is going to be a problem?
Right.
And there were some concerns, some very general concerns.
Who are you traveling with that they don't understand?
It was a guy named Gary Escobar. He's
Gary Escobar.
Gary Escobar from Fort Worth.
They don't understand the rules in a different country.
No, don't be an idiot. Do not.
No.
Be.
No, especially Cuba. Like, don't bring anything in. Don't take anything out. And if it means nail clippers, don't do it. Don't play games in Cuba.
No one asked me about nail clippers at the Dole plantation.
These two guys were following me.
Nobody was like, hey, give me your clippers.
So we recognized one guy. We were walking to go get tickets for the Buena Vista Social Club performance. And we were walking through Havana. And we noticed this guy in this red shirt. And then we kept walking. And then he pops up like three blocks later. And he's already there when we get there. So he's already taken some other road. And we're like, oh, God. Now, they have a bunch of police, and their police do not mess around. They'll just beat the hell out of everybody.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. So, but we're still nervous, like, because I've been in New Orleans, because it feels like New Orleans. And if that's something like that happens in New Orleans, you know, like, you got it. You got to be on the lookout. So I'm immediately concerned, and we stand out. Two white guys, although Solis is part Cuban. He's like half Cuban, actually, and speaks Spanish. But looks like a widow. So, you know, we're standing out. And there's another guy all of a sudden that shows up and is kind of trailing us. I'm like, oh, my God. And then he starts to approach us and talk to us. And Chris is talking in Spanish. And basically what he wanted to do was show us where to get the tea. He's like, what do you need help? They wanted to help us so that we would buy them mojitos. They're just like, we'll go to the – they're either going to want money or the mojitos. And I'm like, yeah, let's just – yeah, we knew where we were going. Yeah, show us where to go. And we'll buy you a mojito. That's good. I don't want any problems in Cuba.
John, you met a friendly guy and his buddy when you were a young man in Europe, right? At a train station?
Oh, yeah. He's very friendly. Very friendly.
Where was it? In Yugoslavia?
No, it was in Nice. Nice,
yeah,
it's a train
France.
Station.
That's right.
For those who didn't hear that story, too long. We got a break.
In a different world, John Granato's not doing this job.
No. If things had doing this job. John Granato doesn't
make it
past.
I didn't want to get so dark.
21 years old.
I didn't want to get too dark, but yeah, that was in play as well.
There was a good chance that there was no John Granato, 22-year-old.
Would have been sold into sex slavery.
Yep. would have been it's a living.
not the one you're looking for.
Who do you think
I'm
of the
sure
clients?
Where would
exactly
I have made more money?
Clients?
Where would I have made more money?
I guess you haven't seen enough
longevity,
movies,
though.
Movies.
Here, this was the spot.
Absolutely.
You would have ended up on
doing this a lot longer than I would have done
something
that.
Something like Saw.
Yep. All right, we're done. Hey, taking a break. Don't go anywhere. ESPN 97.5.
You are listening to Houston's longest-running sports radio morning show.
On ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
From the Huntington Bank Studios, here's John and Lance.
I mean, LSU just don't care who they sign. Did you see this story, Kim Mulkey's story?
Yeah, I talked a little bit about it yesterday with you guys. For those who don't know, Kim Mulkey is in the talent acquisition business, and it doesn't matter what line she may
cross
matter. To do it.
She's got a Ukraine.
Well, she had a Ukraine.
Had a Ukraine girl on her team, Kate Koval. And she went out and signed a 17-year-old Russian center, Anna Maneva.
And made them fight?
No.
Because that sounds like something that could have happened with
Koval. Just said, Koval's dad is in the military in Ukraine. And she was like, I can't play on this team with this girl. And Mulkey talked to her about it beforehand. Tried to change her mind. She signed the Russian anyway.
She's like, the Russian's better.
Well, that must be. Although Koval is a bit. Koval's a pretty good player, right?
I'll look it up. I don't know. I don't know her beyond the story that Kim Mulkey had the conversation with her, and she said, "Sorry, I'm not going to allow a conflict across the world to affect how I recruit." And the Ukrainian player said, "Okay, I'm out," as you laid it out.
Cool.
Her dad is in the military fighting a war against the Russians, and now the Russian athlete, from what we know, nothing to do with the war, but it's just a thing. I'm not going to be on the same team when my dad is fighting a war against her people.
I'm sure she can find another college team that doesn't have any Russians on it, right?
Probably.
Are Russian women basketball players like Australian kickers?
Punters?
Punters?
No. I think she should be able to find a home.
I think she can find a place.
She's 6'5".
Remember
8.6 rebounds.
Remember
find
when
a
there was the beef between like the Serbs and the – who was it? The
Croatia.
Yeah, it was Vlade Divac.
Oh, you
who
mean
were the
way
ones
back.
Who used to be friends and they weren't friends anymore? Yeah, right. It was Vlade and – they had that documentary.
Yeah.
What's his name? Peja Stojakovic.
Peja.
It was Peja.
I think
right?
It was Peja, yeah.
Or was it the guy from the
Well, they played on the same team.
No, it was the guy who was with the Nets.
Drazen Petrovic.
It was Petrovic.
That's right. They were best friends.
Petrovic and it broke up Petrovic and Vlade.
Brothers is what it's called.
Brothers, yeah. That was a heartbreaking one right there.
Yep. Well, it's war. Could you guys play with an Iranian player right now?
Do a show with it?
Do a show.
I probably could.
You mean a person who was born in Iran and we brought over to do a Houston radio show?
Right. If Todd hires an Iranian to come and do a show here,
well,
would you guys be able to work
there
with
him? There is a difference. I think you would actually have to ask the Iranian, considering they didn't attack on American soil. I think it'd be a little different.
I don't really have, like, if you had been sold into sex slavery in Nice, France, when they almost abducted you,
right.
I probably could have done a show with an Iranian.
What does that have to do with it?
Just wanted to say that about John.
Could you do it with a Frenchie, the Frenchie who abducted me?
We'd do a segment.
You can do a segment?
We at least
like, what did
about
he say?
It.
Was he screaming?
You are a bad person. Both of you are, actually.
Bad.
But to answer your question.
All right, in line two, welcome in.
He's not your co-host? He's just calling in?
Mon frère is on line two, and
Jacques is online.
Yeah, Jacques is online, too, and a special guest here. I want to spend a little time with him talking about an abduction that just took place in Nice. You kind of know him.
No, John Granato. It took place 40 years.
I know, but I wish
it
happened sometime, like, when we were on 1560, because we could have got so much. We could have got so much run out of that. Like, we could have just
think
taken
about
on
the documentary.
Every show. Hoffy would have done a long segment. Hoffy would have done an entire week on you getting. He would have had fake abductors on his show.
It's just bad guys with bad French accents.
Yeah. He went ahead to Furious Girl on.
Yeah, that's a show.
That's a show. That's a
Wait,
show.
Wait, what? Oh, he would have? Yeah. Man, Furious is good. I like Emmy Rossum.
That's really good.
Emmy Rossum has some edge. That's my new.
Oh, there's another one out now, right? Yeah.
The last
Sunday night.
Yeah, yesterday.
It's Sunday
The
11.
Most recent episode is out for people to watch.
It comes out on
seven.
Sundays at 11 o'clock.
Yeah. It is the second to last episode.
Yeah, the last one now. I saw was she shot the boyfriend.
Yeah.
Well, that is two episodes ago now, but yeah. it could be a spoiler for some.
Yeah, I don't care.
I mean, this is a really good show.
It's a really good show.
It's well written. It's really good. Emmy Rossum, I like her hair. I like that little. She's one of those that, like, Keri Russell. I didn't like Felicity. I'm like, I don't. This doesn't do anything for me. Then when I saw her in The Americans, I'm like, oh yeah.
So that
kind of and the Diplomat. I'm like, kind of like this.
Yeah.
Well, she like
Emmy Rossum.
You and Matthew
Phantom
Riff.
Of the Opera.
I mean,
all this
Felicity.
Stuff, like, oh, yeah.
I mean, she was like early 20s, and you're a little older than her, right?
So well, she also was Goody Two Shoes.
Yeah.
She wasn't Goody Two Shoes
in
The
she's
Americans.
She's a grown woman. The
no,
Americans.
No, she was doing stuff.
Emmy
in the
Rossum Americans. Isn't Goody Two Shoes in this show.
No, no.
She's got some. Issues.
Yeah.
Well, rightfully so, considering what she went through in the show. Yeah.
But that first scene where you see where the mirror gets broken, like, what's going on here?
For people who don't know, that show's on Hulu right now. Furious. It's 7 episodes into an 8-episode season. It's about a detective on one side, Emmy Rossum, and a serial. Well, not a serial killer, I guess, but
they're targeted.
I guess you can call her that. She's targeting men who.
Who've done her wrong.
Who've done her wrong, and we'll she is that. Not being kind in the way she targets
no,
them.
No, from the very outset of how they start they get right into it to start the series. Episode 1, scene 1, you're like, what is going on here?
She wasn't kind of Amy Rossum either. No.
But they had a little bit of a bonding, as that spoiler you gave out.
You'll see something in the next episode. There's another twist and turn.
Yeah. Oh. That's
There's a
recommend.
Couple of twists.
That's a unanimous for the show recommend.
Yeah, we all recommend that one.
Anything we missed today?
Well, you did hit on what's going on in college sports, that all the conferences are bonding together to say no more pros.
The Vince Young documentary is out on Netflix.
Yeah. Anything else?
I don't care. Calvin Austin's out for the
year. Yeah, he tore an ACL, the Giants. What is he, a slot receiver for them?
Oh, Reuben Bain also has an
AC
sprain.
He's expected to be ready to go for the
He
for
is
week
my
one.
Pick for Defensive Rookie of the Year. I've won that 3 consecutive years.
What did you win?
Last year.
Do you make bets?
I was able to make other people money.
Got it.
My picks whenever I wrote the articles.
You picked him 3 years, not one.
Yeah, well, I picked him. I had Will Anderson, not the hardest. I had Jared Verse, who was a 10-1. Like, he was the fifth choice, fourth or fifth. And then I had Carson Swessinger at 33-1 as a long shot because I didn't like the board. And I loved him because linebackers who chalk up stat sheets can win that award. And 33-1. Well, actually, it was 50-1 when I first had it. And then it went to 33-1. I know Jeff Schwartz made $3,300 off of that. And he made $1,000 off of Jared Verse. Well, he follows my picks on those. I don't win offense so much, but defense I'm pretty good. And my pick this year, I looked at it all, and I just wrote an article about projecting stats, and I would say my 3 favorite are Reuben Bain, who's now the favorite.
Well, what about the injury?
I'm not too worried
about
that.
It's minor. That's what
Caleb,
they're saying.
Caleb Downs, I think, is going to... Do you know? I don't remember this. Go look at Jalen Petrie's rookie year. Go look at the stats from Jalen Petrie's rookie year. It's astonishing. It's truly astonishing how many tackles he had. It's got to be an NFL. I saw the number when I was doing my research for this article I wrote where I project rookie stats. And I was like, this can't be true. His stats, at least. Now, he may have made a lot of tackles after the catch.
He had 99 solo tackles. He had 48 assists, one sack, five interceptions.
Five interceptions and over 140
passes defense. That's a lot.
Yeah, and 140 some odd tackles. Those numbers are better than Carson Schlesinger's.
Nine STFUs.
Yeah. Well, his tackles for loss, those are stuffs.
Nine. Oh, it's STF. Up to players.
They do.
It's STF.
Okay. ESPN continues. ESPN continues to do stuffs instead of tackles.
They added another stat when players tell another player to
STFU. STF. I accidentally added the U.
His season.
Wow, his rookie year.
It was incredible. That would have, like, his stats in totality surpassed Carson Schlesinger's last year when he won Defensive Rookie of the Year. I had to double check it to see if that wasn't a. So
he didn't win. Who won Defensive Player of the Year that year?
What year is
2022.
It? 2022. I don't know. I'll have to see. I don't know who won it that year, but I do think Caleb Downs has a shot because he's going to get a lot of tackles. He's going to get a lot of tackles. And then the other one.
Sauce Gardner.
Sauce Gardner did. Linebackers who get a ton of tackles. And then if you have somebody. See, I don't think it's going to be Sonny Styles. Arvell Reese has got a chance to get sacks and
Sonny
tackles.
Sonny Styles apparently looked terrible.
Yeah.
In his first or second preseason game.
When I wrote him up, I didn't have him as high as other people. I didn't see everything. And I didn't think he always played hard. Arvell Reese, who was also on that Ohio State team. Like he's got a chance. He's kind of a tweener, but he's a great athlete. He's got a chance to end up with five or six sacks and get to 100 tackles. So, Arvell Reese, David Bailey, Caleb Downs, and Reuben Bain. And but you know those are
you
all
like,
kind of
you like Bain the most.
They're all kind of the favorites. Yeah, I think Bain's power really is going to play in the NFL, and I think he's got the best chance to get to. He and Bailey do both have chances to get to double digit sacks, but. I think it's Bain. Bain is my pick for Defensive Rookie of the Year. He wasn't the favorite, and then once I leaked that out there, I moved the market.
You had that power, huh?
Yeah, I moved the market. A lot of the sharps who follow me on Twitter jumped on, and so now he's the favorite. Mm. He's still 4.5 to 1, though. So, I mean, he's still, you know, it's still pretty good payday.
Apparently, there's a little controversy. Bet Online Sports has got odds for the Little League World Series.
Ooh, that's not great.
No. Iowa is minus 150. To win the U.S. championship. Ohio, Nevada, and Alabama. Curacao is the favorite, the international favorite. Agree or just should there be betting on 12-year-olds?
It feels like, does everything need a wager?
Does everything it just feels need like, a wager? Well, if there's a competition.
I get it, but.
And we could put a line on it.
Does everything. So do we have to be worried about someone getting to a pitcher go, hey. Hey,
have you seen this girl?
Do we have to worry about that now?
But have you seen this girl in the Little League World Series?
Kinsley Rasmus. Excuse me.
It's Colby Rasmus' daughter,
that's
probably.
That's not true.
And one day after she tied the Little League World Series record for strikeouts by a girl, I guess they keep it by a girl, a 12-year-old shortstop and pitcher for Phoenix City, Alabama, broke the record for most total hits by a girl Tuesday with her fifth of the tournament.
She is one of two girls competing in this year's tournament.
Yeah.
There's another girl doing it.
And she who's she pitch for?
Kinley?
Or the Alabama?
Yeah, Phoenix City, Alabama. Yeah.
Is that Kobe's daughter?
No. Lance just says stuff.
Lance just made that up.
No, I mean, there's a chance. I mean.
Well, there's a chance because they have the last name.
Do you think if she was the daughter of a former professional baseball player, it wouldn't just be part of every article written about her?
Is yeah. Kinley Rasmus
no, it's,
related
it says father
to when Colby Rasmus? Uncle.
Uncle Kobe? Oh, nice.
I told you it probably was the case. Colby Rasmus is Kinley Rasmus' uncle. Kinley, a breakout two-way star. So it actually is true. Colby is
true?
I basically got it.
No.
It's an uncle. It's blood.
You said he was her father.
She's got Colby blood going.
She does have Colby blood, though.
She does have Colby blood.
There's no question. It's baseball.
Had to be. How many Rasmuses are there?
Baseball Rasmuses.
There's Rasputin. There's Colby Rasmus. And there's Kinley Rasmus.
There is Robin at Houston Powder Coaters. That's who we're talking about right now. Robin at Houston Powder Coaters is the best of the best. Okay. Houston Powder Coaters, I don't know what it is that you have that's metal. You got an old lawnmower? I don't know. Do you? I don't know. Do you got a trailer? What about your grill? Yeah, you got a smoker and a trailer, and you're using it for the rodeo, and now is the time to get that in there. So, yeah, because when you're at the rodeo, you want it to look great. You want a great presentation. You don't want it all rusted out. You don't want it all looking old. You want it looking great, okay? And it will stay looking great when you powder coat it. If you have any metal, and by the way, the old metal is the best metal. Older metal is much better than newer metal. So keep that. If you can save it as opposed to buying something new, you win. You're looking for the best way to get whatever it is powder coated. They pick it up and deliver it absolutely free. If you have a business and you have a fence or, yeah, some kind of, they'll come to you if you're a business and they will powder coat on the spot. If you are a resident and you need some powder coating, they'll pick it up and deliver it to you absolutely free. You're looking for the best way to powder coat? Well, it's the world's best. It's on a TV show. You can't argue with it. HoustonPowderCoaters.com. Tell Robin that you heard it right here. HoustonPowderCoaters.com.